What's your relationship with your mother like? Or what was it like if she's no longer alive? Yes, Mother's Day is nearly upon us with the usual barrage of ads featuring blissfully, happily, happy mothers and daughters dancing through fields of daisies together. You know, you get the picture. But let's face it though, the reality is that for many, many of us, negotiating the mother-daughter relationship can be very challenging at times. It can be oh so close and yet oh so fraught, full of love and then full of loathing. At a certain point in our adult lives, though, and you might have had this experience, people start to realise that their mothers won't be here forever. And nor will they, for that matter. And that can be a prompt to start resolving lifelong tensions before it's too late. And that was certainly the prompt for two Irish women to start a club called The Daughterhood and to co-write a book of the very same name. And they join us on the line, Natasha Fennell, a communications consultant, and Roisin Ingle, who is features editor, a broadcaster and columnist with the Irish Times newspaper. Welcome to you both.
Thank you. Lovely to talk to you. We're delighted to be here, Natasha.
Natasha, it begins with you. Where did The Daughterhood start?
Yeah, well, I'm very close to my mother, Natasha, and about 6 years ago, my mother contracted lupus. And lupus is a really horrible, aggressive illness which attacks the immune system. I went down to Galway in the west of Ireland to visit her in hospital, and she was a woman who had been very healthy, very well, very able, very high-spirited, amazing woman. And after my visit to the hospital, when I went to visit her, I came outside of the hospital, and I was devastated. Mm-hmm. I was completely devastated. She was 69. I was 42. And I could not believe or take in what the news I'd heard. The prognosis was that bad. So the first thing I saw was a bench. And I went over and sat on the bench and I began to have a meltdown. I had a basic mini meltdown that day. And two things happened that day. The first was, you know, oh my God, is my mother going to die on me? You know, she's going to leave me behind. And the second was just a massive surge of self-scrutiny came over me, and the way it manifested in itself was, you know, have I been a good enough daughter to her? Like, have I been kind to her? Have I done all the things I want to do with her before she dies on me? And it was really all about me, to be honest.
Oh.
It was less to do with my mother than it was to do with me. And that's where it all started. So I knew that other daughters must feel the same. They must have had the same feelings as I do. And that began my odyssey and my exploration of other daughters and asking them two questions. You know, do you have a mother? And are you afraid of her dying? And second of all, do you think you've been a good enough daughter?
Oh, they are such tough questions, Natasha.
Oh, it was awful.
I mean, they're very, very confronting questions. And you were confronted with those very questions in that moment of panic and confrontation with your mother's mortality.
Exactly right. And the response I got from daughters was very straight up. Going, the first was, I can't possibly talk about that. What are you talking about? That's a bit depressing, Natasha. I can't dream of my mother dying. And the other went right across the spectrum to, do you know what? I can't stand my mother. I can't wait for her to die. Mm. So this was clearly touching a nerve. So I knew that there was a subject here that needed to be explored. And you know what? We weren't really talking about it. So I decided to call on Roisin Ingle.
Did you know each other?
No, we never met before. My brother knew her. He put us in touch. And Roisin is a really well-known columnist here in Ireland. She writes really honestly about all her life. But she really had written a lot of columns that I had read, particularly to do with her mother and how much she loved her mother and sometimes struggled with the mother. So that's where it all started.
Yes, Roisin, so Natasha contacted you and you have been very open about your relationship with your mother, a complex relationship. All of these relationships between mothers and daughters are complex. How did you respond to the idea of her project, which initially, I think, went with the title 10 Things to Do with Your Mother Before She Dies? It morphed into something else as the collaboration blossomed.
It did. Well, when Natasha rang me that day and I didn't know her, I was actually in my mother's house. I was spending a lot of time in my mother's house at the time. I emerged through this book as the dependent daughter. All the daughters have names and I was very dependent. So when Natasha rang me, I was in my mum's house because I had kind of employed her as a quasi Weight Watchers leader. I'm sure you have Weight Watchers in Australia, do you? Mm. And being too mean to go along to these meetings, I was making my mother be the Weight Watchers leader. So I was jogging around to her house, and she lives with my little sister, and we had to keep this secret because my little sister would have been very appalled by me doing this. So my mother was writing down on a blackboard my weight losses, my sometimes weight gains, and then hiding the blackboard behind the television. So when Natasha rang me and said that she had this book, which she had an idea for, and as you said, it was called at the time 10 Things to Do with Your Mother Before She Dies, I think that really focuses you, whether you have a good relationship, whether you have a bad relationship, or whether you have an indifferent relationship. It makes you think about, one day my mother's not going to be around, and how am I going to feel about that, and have I done enough? So it immediately felt to me like something I would want to be part of, and it started this journey where I have a column, as Natasha said, in the Irish Times. And at the bottom of one of my columns, I just asked a question to my readers and I said, do you have a mother and would you like to improve that relationship before it's too late? And I didn't know what would come back.
And what happened?
What came back was over 100 emails, but they weren't just like, you know, small emails. They were pages and pages long. And this guilt spilled out, this shame spilled out. People wrote to me saying they had never spoken about their mothers in this way before, being very honest about them, being very honest about the fact that everything wasn't rosy in the mother garden, and that this was a taboo, that this wasn't something that it was okay to say, that you don't get on with your mother. We have the Hallmark version of motherhood, and we feel like this is such a unique bond that everyone gets on, but that's not the case. And I don't know what we expected when I put that call out, but I didn't quite expect the level of kind of pain and shame and guilt, a lot of guilt that spilled out. And what I did was I got my mother to print all those emails out. Now, as I said, I'm a dependent daughter. I hope I'm less dependent now. But at the time, my mother was also acting as partly as my secretary. So she printed out all the emails. And I went round to Natasha's house. We sat there one night and we just read all the emails. And it was absolutely an incredible night. I think Natasha will say the same, you know, that we just couldn't believe that we'd kind of tapped into this daughterly strife that we weren't quite sure at the time existed. And we knew that then we wanted to kind of widen the spectrum of daughters and we wanted to set up a club, basically.
And that's what you did. So you came together and set up the Daughterhood Club, or the Daughterhood, I guess, effectively a sort of Daughters Anonymous, and an incredible range of women have come together in this group to meet each month, to do, as you describe it, mother work. So let me come back to Natasha, because you describe yourself as the dedicated daughter. Roisin describes herself as the dependent daughter. But as the dedicated daughter, how would you describe your relationship?
She is undoubtedly one of the most incredible people I know, never mind the fact that she is my mother. And it stems from the fact, and I'll just give you this in a nutshell, because otherwise I could be here all day. I have got a virus called toxoplasmosis, and I got that at birth. And essentially that left me legally blind, so that I was attached to her at the hip for the first 2 years of my life.
And that shaped your relationship forevermore, didn't it?
Exactly. This is it. It totally shaped my life, totally shaped my relationship. And what I didn't realize, and Roisin will totally get this, at the beginning I was like, you know what, I'm grand. I get on really well with my mother. You know, I learn a lot from this, but really other daughters will learn a lot more. And I was probably a little bit smug. But truthfully, through the daughterhood, what came through is clearly what shaped my relationship with my mother from a very early age is that very fact that she was my champion. She backed me. I went blind at the age of 15. I regained my vision again, you know, a few months later. Now, I'm fine. I just use magnifiers and I use, you know, big font and stuff. There's no big deal at all about my eyesight. But the fact is that she had absolutely never let on that I couldn't do whatever I wanted to do, that she encouraged me. So essentially, I learned through the daughterhood that my real relationship, really what it was boiled down to, was that she had taken me from very early age and decided that Natasha was going to be whatever she wanted to be, and she would never let my eyesight hold me back.
But what's the problem with being a dedicated daughter? How did you come to see that as a burden in some way, for either you or her?
Oh God, there's no burden at all. The fact is, I love being a dedicated daughter. The dedicated daughter, essentially, what a dedicated daughter does and what we articulated through the daughterhood is that she, I, and I can only speak for myself, by the way, she is included in a lot of my plans. Now, I don't have children, you know, and that's a very important part of this. So I have more time to spend with my mother. Mm. I'm able to focus more on her in terms of holidays. We've traveled the world together. And in fact, the big, big transition in my relationship, and a lot of your listeners relate to this, came when I was living in Australia. I spent a year in Melbourne, a very, very happy year in Melbourne in the 90s. And my mother rang me when I was there. And I was about 26, 27, and she rang me and said, guess what, Tash? I've decided I'm going back to college. And she was 56. And I'm like, really? I was like, yeah, I'm going back to college and then I'm going to Jerusalem for a year to study. And I'm like, really? And then she goes, absolutely. And then even before that, before I do all that, I'm coming to Australia to spend 6 weeks with you because we're going backpacking together. And that was a really poignant moment because I began to realize, I realized that my mother was a person with her own ambition, her own dreams, her own desires, yes, and her own, you know, her, she's a woman in her own right. My mother's life did not start when I was born, which is what one of the, you know, objectives of the daughterhood is. Like, we had 10 things like we talk about. So one of the things was to get to know your mother. You know, if you can manage as a daughter to do that, that really helps you become a more dedicated, because you're like a friend as well as being her daughter.
And there was a letting go there, which so is so vital for each other's autonomy, I guess. Joining us on Life Matters this morning on ABC RN is Natasha Fennell and Roisin Ingle. They together, there in Dublin, have written an extraordinary book that came out of a club that they formed called The Daughterhood. Roisin, as you mentioned, you describe yourself as the dependent daughter. As a broadcaster and a newspaper editor, you involve your mother in an incredible way in your life, at social events, at any yeah. number of things. But doing this mother work together with yeah. this group of adult daughters, as you describe it, really allowed you to confront some of the problems with that relationship, yeah. that dependency on your mother. Describe exactly where it became a problem for you.
Well, it became a problem, I suppose, when I realised through the daughterhood and through these monthly meetings that we had. We had 6 monthly meetings, 9 very different daughters around the table talking about, as you talked about earlier, the complex relationships. But for me, I was meeting these daughters and we were all describing what mother work we would like to do. And I wanted to be less self-indulgent around my mother. And I don't know if some of your listeners will relate to, if you have a good relationship with your mother, there's nobody more interested in you than your mother, which is a brilliant thing, because when you get to go for lunch with them, you can blab on about yourself for literally hours in a way you would never do with your friends, because you'd always stop to go, well, what about you? But I was finding that I was going out for lunch with my mother, and at the end, I wouldn't know one thing about what was happening in her life. And so my mother work was to go for lunch with my mum and not just talk about myself. Now, it took me a few goes. I'd come back to the meetings and I'd say, oh God, I went for lunch with her and that didn't quite work out. But what I did was I used my journalistic skills. One time I went for lunch with her, I brought my dictaphone, I put it in the centre of the table, and essentially what I did was I interviewed my mother, and through that it meant that I couldn't keep talking about myself because I was now in interview mode, and I learned things about my mum. I learned that despite the fact that she has 8 children, my dad died when I was very young, she was left with 8 children from the age of 16 down to, you know, a year. She's an amazing woman, and she wasn't, she has macular degeneration in her eyes, which is a disease of the eyes, and she was having to have injections in her eyes, which as you can imagine is a horrible thing. And I was asking her about how she felt. Did she feel loved by everybody? And she actually said to me over this lunch, where I allowed her to speak, that sometimes she didn't necessarily feel loved, you know, that she'd been for her first appointment where a doctor was injecting her eyes and nobody had rung afterwards to say, how did that go? What was that like? And she was lying in her bed thinking, wow, I have 8 children and nobody's rung. So it gave her the space to actually vocalize that, and which wasn't easy for me to hear, because obviously you feel like you want to be a great daughter. And when you hear those things, you have to take them on board. So for me, my mother work was realizing that I have to kind of grow up in my daughterly relationship, that I couldn't just be relying on her. But what was interesting about the meetings was that around this table, different types of daughters emerged.
There were, and some of the stories yeah. are, I mean, you two both have quite good
relationships.
We have
good relationships, exactly.
But amongst the group,
Yeah.
There was Lily, who was the daughter of narcissism, as you describe it, or she does. You had Sophie, who was the daughter of madness. She'd grown up with a mother with bipolar disorder, and that had scarred her tremendously.
Absolutely. And I'd like to talk about both of those, because I think they represent something, again, that's a bit of a taboo, and it's difficult for daughters to talk about who go through that. So Lily, as we say, was the daughter of narcissism. She'd been criticized by her mother all her life, whether it was for her weight or her choice of boyfriends or just everything that she had. She never got that unconditional love that we expect to get from our mothers. And what Lily said one night at the daughterhood meeting was that because she didn't feel loved by her mother, that meant that she was unlovable. And that was a really profound moment for all of us, I think, because it really goes to the heart of the relationship and how deep and how cutting it can be. And she had to realize through her adult life that she was indeed lovable. She went on to have a great partner. Actually, Lily has just had a baby daughter herself, and she had to kind of, well, her mother work was about forgiveness and acceptance. And then you talk about Sophie. Sophie's mother, as you say, was mentally ill. Some mothers just aren't cut out to be mothers, and again, it's something that we don't talk about a lot.
Although many mothers, although we must add there that many mothers with mental illness are very good mothers, but in Sophie's situation, she'd grown up with a lot of anxiety about her mother and her mother's volatility, I guess.
Yeah, and she spoke about that. And the fact is that for her mother, for example, never hugged her. So she used to joke that her mother didn't actually know. She'd have a laugh. This is how you do a hug. She tried to explain it to her mother. And Sophie would go to other people's houses, her friends as a child, and see all these normal mother-daughter things going on, and would come back to her own house and wonder why that wasn't happening for her. But knowing as well and having deep compassion for her mother, who, because it wasn't her fault, this was a condition that she had. And for Sophie, she said a very interesting thing, that when you're not dealt a brilliant mother card, when you don't get that in life, you have to go out in life and find it elsewhere. So she found herself finding other female role models that she could get that from. So I suppose that the thing about the real learning for everybody was, and it was a really safe space, it wasn't judgmental. Everybody listened to everybody else. Everyone tried to help each other with their mother work. And it just became, it was a very limited thing. We had 6 months, 6 meetings. And at the end of it all, we all had, in some way, in different ways, and even very small ways, changed the way that we dealt with our mother. Do you know what it is, Natasha? It's just that there's so many books on the shelves about relationships, romantic relationships, and how we work them out. This is the longest, most enduring relationship, if we're lucky, of most of our lives. And yet, we don't talk about it enough because we take it so much for granted. And it is something that we need to work on a bit more, and it is something I found myself personally, that I look at my mother in a different way now, and I don't take her for granted as much as I used to, and I certainly don't ask her to do all those little jobs for me that I used to do at the beginning of the daughterhood.
And at the end of all this, Natasha, you came up with 10 commandments of daughterhood, which we can't go through, but what would be your top commandment or top two?
Well, I mean, get to know her is one of my absolutes. Get to know her, you know, ask her questions that you don't know, that you'd be curious. Be curious about your mother, like Roisin was saying earlier on, even asking her how she got on in whatever she's doing, whether it's meeting with her friends. But also, don't be left, like we were saying, you know, at the beginning of this daughterhood odyssey, which is, imagine if you could stand at your mother's graveside and have no regrets. Don't regret things you haven't asked her. So ask her stuff you want to know about her on whatever level. The second thing is celebrate her. Celebrate our mothers. I believe, and I've really learned even more to this, that mothers get a raw deal. So celebrate your mother in whatever shape or form that's appropriate. See her for who she is and what she is, rather than what you think she should be. We don't want to stand at our mother's crematorium, graveside, whatever it is, and have regrets, or at least have very few. And that's one of the biggest objectives of the book. That is the premise of the book. And one of the really important, poignant things is, regardless of how good, bad, or indifferent the relationship was, all daughters that I spoke to in my initial research want the relationship to be better, and the relationship with our mothers matters. So whatever we can do before it's too late is to do that.
And so say all of us. Look, congratulations. It is a terrific book, and I think that I have a lot of girlfriends that I'll be giving it to, and possibly a lot of their mothers.
And we'd say happy Mother's Day to all the mothers in Australia too.
Roisin Ingle and Natasha Fennell, thank you so much for joining us on Life Matters.
Delighted.
Thank you.
Yes, I'm delighted too, and happy Mother's Day, indeed.